From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, New York's health commissioner wants more time to complete a study on hydrofracking as the state misses a February deadline. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on an argument that's erupted between the Cuomo administration and the state comptroller over the governor's budget, and we'll have reaction from the North Country to President Obama's State of the Union address. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A February deadline on New York's process to allow hydrofracking has been missed, with Governor Cuomo's health commissioner now saying he needs more time to complete an ongoing health study. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Governor Cuomo's health commissioner, Dr. Nirav Shah, says he wants to further study potential health impacts from hydrofracking, and he'll review some new comprehensive studies on health and fracking that have been released or initiated over the past few weeks. Shah, in a letter to Environmental Commissioner Joe Martens, recommends that any fracking permit should be delayed until he finishes. Shah says in the letter that the time to ensure the impacts on public health are properly considered is before a state permits drilling. Catherine Natta with Environmental Advocate says Dr. Shah is right to ask for a delay.
This is good news. This is what the state should be doing, is investigating the issues before committing to permit any fracking in the state.
Shah will review three studies on the health impact of hydrofracking, one by the US EPA, one by a Pennsylvania healthcare system, and one conducted by the University of Pennsylvania. The health commissioner says he's going to Washington and Pennsylvania in the coming days to get firsthand briefings on the studies. Supporters and opponents of hydrofracking had been looking to February 13th as a key date to determine whether Cuomo was indeed going ahead with fracking. Cuomo's environmental agency would have needed to make public the generic environmental impact statement by then if it were going to complete a related rulesmaking process by a February 27th deadline. Now, Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Joe Martens says he won't act until the health study is completed.
We think the department has done a very thorough job up to now, but we wanted to go the extra mile to have the commissioner of the Department of Health look at everything we've done, and now look at outside studies that are underway that are looking at the potential public health impacts of fracking and determine whether or not those are applicable to the situation we'd have here in New York.
Martens also confirms that he won't be releasing the environmental impact statement on February 13th. That means the February 27th extension of the rulesmaking process, which expires then, will also be missed. But Martens maintains he still has the power to issue permits even if the rulemaking part of the process is not completed. He says he can start issuing permits 10 days after the environmental impact statement is released. The environmental commissioner downplays the rulemaking process, saying it merely codifies whatever is decided in the environmental impact statement, and he says it may not even be necessary in order to issue the permits.
It's good to have rules in place. They're enforceable, but we think we can do by permit conditions all the things that would be adopted in a rulemaking.
Natta with Environmental Advocates says if the environmental agency does not follow through with the rulemaking, it could wind up in court.
There are top attorneys out there that would challenge his assertion on that topic.
A group of landowners in the Southern Tier who live above the Marcellus Shale and would like to see fracking commence are not pleased by the news. Scott Kirkoski is the attorney for the Joint Landowners Coalition.
We're extremely disappointed that the state missed yet another deadline. You know, we've been at this for 4.5 years. That is really hard for our members to take since we've been waiting for so long.
Kirkoski says his group is encouraged, though, by the news that the state could go ahead and issue fracking permits without undergoing another lengthy rulemaking process. And he says it seems the Cuomo administration is throwing pro-frackers a bone.
That might be the intention here.
Environmental Commissioner Martin says he's not doing anything, though, until he sees the results of the health review from the governor's health commissioner, Dr. Shaw.
Be patient, and, you know, we're going to get through a very, very thorough process before we get to a conclusion.
The latest delay means the fracking review process will continue for at least a few more weeks. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Hydraulic fracturing has made a lot of headlines in recent years, but the practice of extracting natural gas has been around since the early 20th century. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a look now at the fracking timeline.
The beginnings of fracking go back to 1908. Some 40 years later, the technology became commercially viable. The industry evolved following the Arab oil embargo and the energy crisis of the 1970s, when government led the call to look for unconventional sources of natural gas. John Holko is the president of Lenape Resources, a Western New York drilling company.
In the mid-70s, we didn't have all the technologies to drill the horizontal, so we were still drilling vertical wells. But what we were doing is we were doing massive hydraulic fracturing to try to recover more natural gas from those vertical wellbores.
Present-day high-pressure fracking methods were first used in Texas in 1999. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has studied the impacts of fracking on drinking water since 2001, with mixed results, often revising or reversing its own findings. By the mid-2000s, gas companies were eyeing New York, which, along with Ohio and Pennsylvania, ranks in the top 10 in energy consumption of all the United States, based on data from the Energy Information Administration. Logan Adsit from the town of Pharsalia co-founded Save the Southern Tier, the newest of handfuls of anti-fracking groups that have sprung up since 2009, when New York's Department of Environmental Conservation released its first environmental review of industrial gas drilling and was immediately criticized for failing to conduct a health or cumulative impacts analysis, failure to protect drinking water supplies, and more.
So it started with just 13,000 comments to the SGIS. And now, I mean, we've got a couple thousand going to the rallies, and even more. Over 200,000 New Yorkers are speaking out.
John Holko weighs in.
The oil and gas industry has evolved dramatically in New York. We've become much more of a proponent of the clean and green, and we do whatever we can to minimize any impact.
Proponents argue that over 1 million gas wells have been fracked without a single incident of environmental impact. Logan Adsit toured a heavily fracked area in Pennsylvania and came back to New York worried about her future.
And I thought, oh my gosh, here I am trying to save plastic, and these people can't even drink water from their well. I thought, I'm going to have to leave. I'm going to have to move. And I was just so sad.
Adsit's concerns are echoed in the Josh Fox documentary Gasland, released in 2012, which shows clips of residents lighting their tap water on fire, allegedly due to high concentrations of methane from nearby fracking. John Holko firmly believes fracking is a safe process.
Look around you and understand the value of energy and realize that you yourself and everybody within this state has the ability to recover this resource safely.
Since taking office, Governor Andrew Cuomo has had both feet in the fracking fire, pressured by both sides to make a decision one way or the other on whether to allow wells to be drilled in New York. About 150 municipalities have temporarily or permanently banned fracking, and many expect to keep local bans intact regardless of what Cuomo decides.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, an argument erupted between the Cuomo administration and the state controller over the governor's budget plan. He's worried about some of the debt involved and some of the one-shot deals to raise revenue. We even hear that Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver is leaning toward Comptroller DiNapoli's idea of what the number should be before he approves anything.
Well, first of all, let's just point out that the reason we have an elected and a separate elected comptroller in New York State is because we want somebody who will hold the governor accountable and say, you know, this is an honest thing, this is not. To say, okay, we're going to allow you to borrow for your pensions later on when things get better, that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, you got to balance a budget. That's what we're supposed to do here in New York, and he better do it. Look, he doesn't like to be criticized, and he certainly has had a checkered past where Comptroller DiNapoli, who, after all, let's face it, comes out of the legislature, is a friend of the speaker's, but is an honest broker and very respected by his colleagues. And, you know, Cuomo didn't do what he should have done as a Democrat, endorse his fellow Democrat when he ran for office. And now, of course, there is no incentive to lean on him and say, hey, you're my friend. That isn't going to work because DiNapoli is doing what his conscience tells him to do. From what I can see, he's absolutely right.
It seems like, Alan, the governor's hit somewhat of a rocky patch. We saw his numbers drop a little bit after the New York SAFE law passed, and we're seeing some fights developing now over the budget. So what's going to happen here?
Well, you know, the governor knows and has told me in the past, and we know it, that, you know, when you come in with great numbers, that those numbers will fall. I can't fault them for that. And when you use your prestige and your high numbers to do the right thing, for example, on gun control, which he's done, then you lose some people. But his numbers are still very, very good. And I think most governors and most politicians around the country would die for them. Now, obviously, he's being portrayed as a bit of a Hamlet. You know, his father, Mario Cuomo, a great governor, was known as Hamlet on the Hudson because on some things he was indecisive. And he was fretting whether to run for president or whether or not to run for president. And there's a cartoon, as we speak in the Daily News today, about, you know, young Cuomo being Hamlet on the Hudson, too, because of the fracking. Now, of course, the right-wing New York Post Murdoch, who's got his real troubles now, his newspapers in England, they've just arrested a whole bunch of people. I'm still waiting to see whether he is held accountable under our laws for corruption abroad. Adds up. That's an aside. But basically, the Cuomo people know that Murdoch and the rest of those right-wingers are all for the fracking. But he didn't count on how adamant so many environmentalists, so many regular citizens in New York State were about the fracking. And so he's just letting it sit there and he's letting it go and he is not doing any more than he has to. Now, there are those people who believe that each of these actors, the environmental commissioner, the health commissioner, are all separate players. I have my doubts. I don't know, but I have my doubts. I think that the great puppeteer, who is Cuomo, is pushing the buttons, and when the environmental commissioner says something or when the health commissioner says something, certainly if they didn't say it should be that way, the second floor, otherwise known as Cuomo, the second floor certainly is informed as how it's going.
So after missing their deadline this week and pushing it back again, if you were to look into your political crystal ball, do you think we're going to have limited fracking, any fracking in New York?
I have no idea, David. I'll be honest with you. In the beginning, I thought the deal was set, that the governor, on his way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, at least in his head, thought that if he could solve the energy problem in New York, it could be an argument. Let's remember, let's be fair, that Barack Obama is still calling for drilling and for fracking. So I think the vehemence of this opposition has really got him confused. You know, sometimes in politics, an issue which might not otherwise become the issue just rises to the top. And that's what's happened with fracking. It is a symbol of environmentalism now, of liberalism now. You know, I'm glad I'm not Andrew Cuomo making that decision because I know where I'd be, of course. I'd be against it. But that's me. But I don't know where he's going to come down on it in the end. But I know one thing. They're probably sitting there on the second floor and saying, hey, you know, maybe if we just ignore it for a while, it'll go away.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has proposed closing two correctional facilities. One is in the Hudson Valley, and it's the state's only minimum security prison for women. And now there is concern about what will happen to the programs available to these women. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Governor Cuomo recommends closing what he called two of the least efficient prison facilities in the state, One is Bayview in Manhattan. The other is the Beacon Correctional Facility in Dutchess County, the state's only minimum security prison for women. Last month, during his proposed 2013-2014 budget address, Cuomo mentioned that Beacon has a 53% vacancy rate.
$69,000 per year we're paying to keep an inmate there compared to $34,000. It's not right. We can't afford it. If we're serious about balancing the budget, then let's run government the way it has to be run, and we should close these two facilities.
He said closing the two facilities will impact 273 positions, all of which can be absorbed in the current system. Sophia Elijah is the executive director of the Correctional Association of New York, an independent nonprofit organization.
Their opportunity to live in a less restrictive environment would be eliminated.
And while she does support downsizing in general, she questions whether closing Beacon Correctional is a wise decision, as she says the Beacon inmates have certain programs that might not be available to them when they are transferred to higher security prisons. Programs, she says, that prepare them for successful reentry into society and reduce recidivism.
So one of the things that we've called for is whatever opportunities existed at Beacon that would be lost will be replicated in other facilities so that women will still have the ability to participate in work crew, earn merit time, and early release from prison.
She explains that Beacon Correctional is the only women's facility with a work crew program, through which women clean up parks or pick up trash along highways, for example. As to whether a work crew program would be replicated at other facilities, a State Division of Budget spokesman says that every Department of Corrections and Community Supervision facility has programs to help the incarcerated redirect their lives to become productive, law-abiding members of society. However, he could not speak specifically to whether the work crew program would be replicated, given the early stages of the budget process. He added, though, that programs available to inmates in general include educational and vocational training, and it's these types of programs, says the Correctional Association's Elijah, that are important.
Well, more educational programs and vocational programs that are relevant to the real-life work experiences that people would be experiencing when they are released would be very helpful. The opportunities to have higher educational pursuits would make a big difference. There's a very strong correlation between successful reentry and the opportunity to achieve higher education while incarcerated.
The Division of Budget spokesman says the women would be transferred to two of the state's medium security prisons for women, Albion Correctional Facility and Taconic Correctional Facility. As for the proposed closing of the Beacon Correctional Facility, the Correctional Association's Elijah says there could be an unintended consequence.
Well, I mean, if we're eliminating the only opportunity for women to be in a minimum security facility, but there are at least a few, not many, not enough, minimum security facilities available for men, is there a gender question or discrimination question that arises from that? I mean, I'm sure that that was not the governor's intent, but it could well end up being the result.
State Assemblyman Frank Skartatos, a Democrat whose district includes Beacon, says he is reviewing the situation. He prefers that the facility be made more efficient rather than be closed, as he says he is concerned about any negative economic impact the prison's closure would have on the city of Beacon. And Democratic State Senator Terry Gibson, whose district also includes Beacon, says he plans to fight the proposed closure of Beacon Correctional, saying he is not convinced that the state will realize the savings they claim, and he is also concerned about the economic impact on the city.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. President Barack Obama delivered his State of the Union address this week, and the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was out in the North Country to gather reaction.
President Obama chastised Congress for its partisan bickering and lack of progress in tackling the nation's imperatives during his State of the Union address.
The American people don't expect government to solve every problem. They don't expect those of us in this chamber to agree on every issue. But they do expect us to put the nation's interests before party. They do expect us to forge reasonable compromise where we can.
Some members of Congress are promoting bipartisanship, forming a new group called No Labels. New York 19th District Republican Congressman Chris Gibson says the goal is to build trust across the aisle.
This is a group of about 40 members of Congress that are looking to unite our Congress so that we can move us forward, to grow this economy, to move back to a balanced budget over time. For example, Peter Welch from Vermont. We have worked together extensively in the 2 years I've been down here. We led the coalition to address the hurricanes Irene and Lee that resulted in significant appropriations to help us recover. We worked together on veterans, and we worked together on the Farm Bill. So we now are both involved in this No Labels initiative. This is very important that if one believes, as I do, that the status quo is unacceptable, then in an era of divided government, given our constitutional design, the only way we're going to change the status quo is if we work together.
Vermont Democrat Peter Welch.
The biggest challenge we face is congressional dysfunction. You know, we have big problems, but they're solvable problems on energy, on the budget, on health care, on job creation. These things can be addressed in a very productive way, but Congress has to be willing to essentially settle for making progress as opposed to have this illusion that there can be some big ideological victory on either side. Politics has to be about principled compromise and making progress, not just about arguing.
New York 21st District Democratic Congressman Bill Owens sat with members of the No Labels group during the State of the Union address.
I think the proof will be in the actions that we're actually able to accomplish. That means we need to come up with some legislation that is acted on and that has strong support from this group, and that this group in effect becomes the driver or the difference maker in the passage of the legislation. To some degree, No Labels did have some significant impact on the vote for the No Budget, No Pay bill. So that is a beginning. We need to do more, and we'll only be able to determine whether or not this group works if, in fact, we accomplish something.
Congressman Welch and Owens found most of the agenda presented by President Obama sensible and economically beneficial. Vermont's Congressman Peter Welch was pleased there were no new grand initiatives presented by the president.
We would be skeptical if the president came in and had some big, bold new initiative that somehow was going to solve the problems that we know we have. And I thought what he did well was two things. Number one, he really described the challenges that the middle class in America face. That's what he did very well. And I thought people listening, from small business owners to families trying to figure out how to pay the tuition and hang on to their jobs, I think he described their world in a way that gives confidence that he understands it. Secondly, his proposals to address it were practical. So it was like a practical middle class agenda, and it reminded us we've been at our best and our strongest when the middle class is doing well.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1307. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.